October 30th, 2012, in Vrindavan, Nectar Devotion, Chapter 16, Part 2. Okay, I know it's taking a while to go through this.
It's so sad.
Oh, good. Oh, good. I realize that this is difficult stuff, and it's stuff we probably don't talk about enough in our Hare Krishna movement. All right, so we were talking about anarta nivritti. I actually wouldn't mind a little bit of a fan here, but just that much isn't going to do anything. But we could have a little bit more than that. Anyway, whatever. So we were talking about the fact, and this makes it very hard to figure out if one's eligible for Raganuga Bhakti, that in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, you think you don't have any anartas. And when you actually enter into Nista, which is the same as Trinada Pisa Nichenaturi Vasahishna Mani Namani Vena Kirtani Sadahari, you look in your heart and what do you see? Whoa! Yeah, just like that. You look in your heart and you say, oh my God, I'm full of envy and lust and greed and bad. Yeah. And it's interesting. It's really interesting that you start to see that when you were a beginner, you didn't even see it. When you were a beginner, you thought, I'm just so surrendered. I went to one, the Vyas Puja, one of my godbrothers, and one of his disciples, this was North Carolina. One of his disciples was very, very new, inspiring disciple, really new, maybe in the movement 2 weeks, something like that, was offering an homage and saying, and then I felt the ecstasy of full surrender. And I'm sitting there thinking, that's really funny. I didn't say anything. I thought about it, but I didn't say anything. So, you know, it's just like, I remember, I might have told you this, I was in the Sankirtan van going to O'Hare Airport, and I looked at one of the other Brahmacharinis, and I said, I love going on book distribution because I just love Krishna so much. And she said, you don't love Krishna, you're not even initiated. And I felt devastated. I thought, well, why am I even in the Hare Krishna movement if I don't love Krishna? I might as well just go do something else, you know. And one time I was giving Bhagavatam class, and I was talking about Madhurya Kadambini. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that in the beginning, your love for Krishna is just a little trace. And then there was a devotee who didn't come to my classes for the next month. And finally I found her, I said, did I offend you? And she said, well, you said I only have a trace of love for Krishna. And I just felt so offended. You think about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how he would say, I have no love for Krishna, because if I had any love for Krishna, I wouldn't be willing to live without him for even a moment. I would have died. Okay, so we've talked about how you can tell the desire part. You can tell the desire part. How? How can you tell the desire part?
Well, there's nothing to compare. I mean, you just know.
You just know. You feel something. You feel some specific attraction for Krishna in one of the five rasas, and you know it's spiritual. Now, you probably will say, and having counseled many, many devotees who've come to this stage, they all say, but I'm not ready for it, so it can't be real. I haven't met anyone who said anything else. So everyone who I've counseled who's reached this stage, they come to me and said, Ermila, this happened to me, and I all of a sudden had this feeling. But I thought, well, this can't be real, because I'm not yet pure. So every one of them said that. And maybe the ones who already thought they were pure didn't talk to me. Maybe I only talked to the ones who thought they were impure. I don't know. But I think that's pretty common, that one will say, you know, well, I'm not yet pure. So what kind of anarta nivritti would you have to look for? A little honesty is nice, but my dear Prabhu, a little honesty, at the end of Anarjanavritti, you're going to look in your heart and see this huge mountain of envy and anger and greed, and you will.
Come in the mode of goodness, I guess you're in
place. You won't think you're in the mode of goodness.
But when you're in Anarjanavritti, it means you don't have any material
results. Okay, when are the Anarjas finished? Prema.
Oh, okay.
So you will. Your anarjas are not really finished. At the end of Anarjanavritti, your anarjas are not really finished. Again, you can't start a something. You can't say the beginning of something is the end of something. Everybody got this? Do you have this yet or not?
Not really.
Okay. Prema is perfection. Prema is perfection. Even perfection, you can always go on. Prema isn't the end. But you're perfected, you graduated, you're done. There's no more material desires in your heart, finished kaput. Bhava, which we'll start talking about tomorrow, there's some scent. But basically bhava, you're perfect, basically. But prema, you're actually perfect. Until bhava and prema, you're not perfect. There's still material desires, there's still material contaminations. So all this is called bhakti in practice. But at the higher levels of bhakti and practice, it's a different kind of practice. The nature of your practice changes. Think about if you're learning to play a musical instrument. So in the beginning, you're just learning some isolated beats. And when you become expert, you're practicing a whole performance. Right? If you're learning how to dance, first you're just learning, okay, this step, this step, this step, this step. This, just learning individual steps, there's no feeling. And then at the higher stage of dance, you're practicing the whole dance. It's different. Are we getting there? So it's still practice. It's still practice. It's still practice. It's still practice. If you say, I can't do Raga Nuga Bhakti until I'm at Prema, that doesn't make sense. We have a lot of people who think that way. First, I've got to be a prema, and then I can do Raga Nuga Sadhana, huh? Now, why do we think that way? Because Srila Prabhupada has statements in here like, you have to already be liberated. You have to be free of anartas. So we think, well, liberated and free of anartas must mean I'm already at prema. But then why is Prabhupada talking about a gradual development of your spiritual body and a gradual development of your relationship? And why is it a sadhana? Why is it before bhava? It's still a sadhana. And there's a process of awakening. So the kind of... That's really unwise. Can we close the door? Yeah. So there's a kind of, there's a certain level of liberation. So you can tell the desire is real because the quality is very different from anything else you've desired and anything else you've experienced, and it's going to be towards Krishna in a particular relationship. But how do you know that you're at the end of Anarjanavritti? This is not an easy thing to answer. Yeah. Oh, but just, no, the anarthas from offenses are the last to go. According to Madhurya Kadambini, the anarthas from offenses are the very, very last to be eradicated.
So we keep doing offenses.
Well, you may still be getting some reaction from offenses. At least according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. I'm just speaking on his authority, that the last anarthas to leave are the anarthas from offenses. An artist from past sinful activity, an artist from past pious activity, an artist that grew up along with the bhakti creeper, those will go sooner than the artist from offenses. So how will you know that you're at enough of an artist of vritti to start Raganuga Bhakti? You've had this desire awaken. somehow you were looking at the deities, or you were reading one of Prabhupada's purports, or you were chanting in kirtan, or you were chanting japa, you were looking at a picture of Krishna, or you were talking about Krishna, something. One very senior devotee I know said it had happened to him flying on an airplane. And that awakens. And then you're going to think, oh, but wait a minute, I'm not finished with anarta nivritti. I'm still contaminated. I still have material desires. So how will you know? Yes? At least the gross is gone, yes. Definitely, there should be no more intoxication, illicit sex, meat eating, gambling. That definitely. If you're still involved in intoxication, illicit sex, meat eating, and gambling, then you have not come through anarta nivritti. That for sure. So if you say, you know, well, I think I've had some awakening, a feeling for Krishna, but I'm smoking marijuana. No. Maybe Krishna's given you some sort of special mercy, but you're not qualified to start Raganuga Bhakti. Clear? Then you may have had some awakening of something from some shadow or reflective ecstasy, which we'll talk about a little later. There might be some unusual circumstance where something's very temporarily awakened, but you can't actually start Raganuga Bhakti if you're engaged in gross sinful activities. And you should at least be able to see that the cleansing process is going on. That the process of subtle cleansing is going on. That you're becoming free from subtle attachment. You should see that that's going on. And you should be frankly, honestly, being able to see yourself as a fallen soul. Because that's how Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes Nista. That you're starting to feel some genuine humility. That if you're no longer just saying, oh Prabhu, I'm so offensive, oh Prabhu, I'm so fallen, as just some sort of mantra we say in the Hare Krishna movement so that we can get a chapati and people will be our friends, you know, not just like, but you actually feel it. Sanatana Goswami in Briya Bhagavatamrita talks about how prema and danya go together. This humility and love go together. You can't have love without humility. So another way you know you're progressing through an arch and a riti is you're actually starting to get some humility. It doesn't mean you always go around going, oh, Prabhu, I'm so small. I mean, Prabhupada didn't do that. The Goswamis didn't do that. That's not how they behaved. So that's not what we mean by humility. But you're starting to actually see yourself a little honestly in your heart. You don't have some really puffed up conception that I'm a great devotee. Starting Raganuga Bhakti does not mean you look in the mirror one day and say, oh, I'm now a great devotee. Now I can start Raganuga Bhakti because now I'm pure. And this is the funny contradiction. Starting Raganuga Bhakti is when you look in the mirror and go, wow, I am really fallen. I don't have any qualification. Don't we read this from the Acharyas? Isn't that what they say?
Yeah.
Do any of them say, now I'm qualified to begin devotional service because I'm so pure?
Oh, with me, I'm so fallen and wretched.
Yeah. Exactly. But I love that cowherd boy. Don't they say both?
Yeah.
They say, although I'm so fallen, although I'm so wretched, although I have no hope, yet I'm in love with this cowherd boy, Krishna,
really
who's stolen my heart. It's confusing for everybody. It's not just confusing for you. It's confusing for everybody, which is why I'm spending so much time on it. It's really, really confusing. Because the more you advance in an arta nivritti, the more you're going to see yourself as fallen. And then when some genuine feelings for Krishna awaken, then you're likely, because you've been had it drummed into your head, rightly so, and good thing, that we don't want to be sahajiyas, and so you think, oh my God, oh no, I'm a sahajiya. Now I thought Krishna is my child. Oh no, now I'm going to hell, I'm a sahajiya. You know, and it kills people. Now eventually, if you keep telling Krishna to leave, eventually he may bang down your door, but you know, eventually he may leave also for a while. So if you're chanting, and Krishna one day knocks on your door and says, here I am, and you say, oh, Krishna. You don't want to then say, oh, I'm too fallen, go away. You know, you never hear that in the prayers of the Acharyas. They never say, Krishna, I'm so fallen, go away. Do they ever say that? They ever say, I'm so fallen, Krishna, you please don't come into my heart because it's too dirty? Do they ever say that? They say, don't leave me. They say, although I'm fallen, although I'm dirty, although I'm wretched, don't leave me. So this is it's a backwards thing. So when Prabhupada says here, you have to be a liberate, you have to be an Arjuna Vritti, you're like, oh, I guess it's not for me. You know, but you do have to have the desire awaken. It cannot be just intellectual. It cannot be just intellectual. It cannot be intellectual. It cannot be intellectual. It cannot be, well, I read this in the book, and well, it sounds like it'd be really far out to be a Manjari Gopi. I think that's what I'd like to be. It doesn't work that way. You can't do that. I mean, you can, but you're not going to get where you want to get if you do that. It won't happen. Now, is this something that we do or it comes? Well, both. It's only going to come if you do something. You know, you're only going to get the spontaneous feeling for Krishna if you hang around Krishna. You're not going to get the spontaneous feeling for Krishna if you hang around Kamsa. You know, you got to hang around Krishna. You got to meditate on Krishna. If you're meditating on somebody else, it's not going to come. Yes?
When you say that, I thought association is also...
Association is so important.
Doesn't that go all the way down?
Yes. Definitely. In fact, I heard one devotee, wonderful devotee, gave a class on Satam Prasango Mamavirya Sambhado Bhavanti Vidkarna Vasayanam Kata Tajyosan Advasa Pravarga Bhartani Shraddhara Tir Bhakti Anusha Kamishchati, which is the same, talking about Shraddha to Prema. And he was saying that this Satam Prasanga, so Sangha, Sat Sangha, Satam Prasanga, that it's a more intense kind of Sangha. And as you go through Shraddha to Prema, your kind of sangha, your level of sangha is increasing. We can talk about this as degrees of faith. Your faith is increasing, your love is increasing, your attachment is increasing, your sangha is increasing. Increasing and changing in quality. Increasing and changing in quality. So yes, you can describe this as any one of these. Okay, any questions now on eligibility? And I'll read a couple here because I really want to go on to method. What exactly are anartas? Anartas are something that is arta means a goal or something that's wanted. Anarta is something that's useless. So an anarta is something that's useless that you're holding on to. Yes. Kutam, can you say it's the simple proclivities, yeah? And specific simple proclivities. But they're things that we've been holding on to. I always give the example of when people keep a tiger as a pet. You know, there was a famous case in America a few years ago of two men who did a show with tigers. Yeah. And one of the men got attacked by a tiger. I think he got bitten on his neck, and I don't know if he ever really fully recovered. So people who keep tigers as pets, they may think, oh, very, very nice pets. But they're not a nice pet. Tiger's not a nice pet. Or python, it's not a nice pet. Sometimes even dogs are like that. You know, we know people where the dogs have attacked the children or something like that. But you're thinking, oh, nice, 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 nice. So anartas are exactly like that. Anartas are something you think is very nice. You're taking shelter of it, you're holding on to it, you're maintaining it, you're embracing it. You're glorifying it, you think it's wonderful, and it's killing you. That's an anartha. It's something you don't need, it's useless, it's destroying you, it's bad for you, but you like it. So everyone can understand this, like with smoking cigarettes, right? Everybody knows it's killing them, but they like it. They're spending their money on it, they're buying it, like, that's an anartha. The main anartha is envy of Krishna. That's the root. The desire for fame, the desire to be Krishna, the envy of Krishna, and all the other anartas are like branches and leaves of that complicated banyan tree. But the essential anartha is just an envy of Krishna. How to understand the attachment in the beginning is genuine and potential raga. It's possible it can be temporary, being affected by an external. That we'll get into a little more with bhava. There can be a shadow or a reflective bhava that generally comes by association, and Prabhupada says it is possible for that to turn into the real bhava. It's possible, even if something is just, even if you're feeling something that's just due to association, it can still turn into the real thing. So nurture it anyway. Even if you say, oh, well, this feeling I have, it must just, I'll tell you an example. So a very good friend of mine told me, she was in Mayapur, circumambulating the deities. And they circumambulate the deities as part of the kirtan. Just like here we take Prabhupada around the temple. So they take Prabhupada around the deities inside the temple there in Mayapur. And as she was walking in the procession, there's all these paintings on the walls. Who here has been to Mayapur? Okay, so you all know there's paintings on the walls. And she said that as she was walking by each painting, it wasn't a painting. It was real. And she's thinking, I'm not qualified enough to see this. And then she thought, I wonder why I'm seeing this. And she noticed a particular person who was leading the kirtan, and she thought, maybe it's because I'm around this person. So that can happen. A similar instance I know is of a woman who was a head pujari for 30 years at a particular temple. And one devotee was visiting who had used to serve the deities there many years ago. And as he was standing in the temple looking at the deities, her husband was also there, she said she looked at the deities and there was Krishna. They didn't look like statues, they looked like there was Krishna. And she said she didn't say anything to anyone. And a week later, her husband said, oh, when so-and-so was here visiting, did you notice anything unusual when we were in the temple? And they both had exactly the same experience. So it can sometimes happen that if you're in association with an advanced devotee, that you may experience some sort of revelation or some sort of feeling that's not yours. That's coming, that's reflecting off of them, or that's a shadow of them. But we're going to get to that in the next, it's either in the next chapter or the chapter after that, where Prabhupada says that in that situation, you can develop that into your own real feeling. Even though the spark is coming from somebody else, you can still light the fire in yourself and turn it into something real. So I wouldn't reject things like that just because they don't come from you. Yes?
But if Krishna allows you to see that, doesn't that make you eligible to get to that?
Why not? Why not? And to think that this is mercy from someone else is always true anyway. Even if you have some experience sitting alone in your room reading Krishna book. Well, where'd Krishna book come from? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense to everybody? It's always mercy. It's always mercy. And one never thinks one deserves it. That's the paradox. You're not going to come to a point that you say, well, now I'm so pure I can begin Raghunuga Bhakti because I deserve it. That's never going to happen. If you're waiting for that to happen, you're going to be waiting for eternity. You're not going to say, well, now I'm pure and I deserve it. In fact, if you're thinking that, then you're definitely not ready. That's the paradox. And sometimes that happens. Well, you know, I've been in the movement for 10, 15 years and I've chanted my rounds every day and I followed all the principles and I'm really pure. And so now I'm just going to start Raghunuga Bhakti. You know, forget it. Oh, what a question this is. What if that intense desire and feeling is towards Srimati Radharani? Very nice. So I've met people where their first awakening was towards Radharani. Some where their first awakening was toward Balaram. Some were toward Litananda. We're all individuals. We're all individuals. In what stage will we be free from all anarthas, prema? Tell us about an artist born of bhakti. An artist born of bhakti is weeds that we've developed as we're performing bhakti. So that means it's generally an anarta that I'm a very religious person, I'm a very spiritual person. People treat me with respect because I'm a religious and pious person, and I start to enjoy that. I start to enjoy whatever prestige comes with being a religious person. Okay, so those were the questions about eligibility. Now yes, any other questions about eligibility? I want to make sure we have time for method. Yes?
Let's say that the person misses that time. For example, the person is
in. It'll come back.
And just continues with Vaidhi Sadhana.
It'll come back. Krishna will come back.
What did she say?
She said, suppose they missed that time. Basically,
and then just continuously go on for years and years in life. Could there be any difference in their development?
There still be some difference. Narada Muni says, one who has once tasted cannot help but remember that taste again and again. So if someone's had that kind of experience and pushed it away, and I've met many people who've done that. Many people.
Why would they do that?
Answer? Yes, they think they're not eligible. And they don't want to be a sahajiya, so they push it away. They tell Krishna to go home. So Krishna comes and awakens them, and they say, no, no, I'm not qualified, go home. Is that humility?
Isn't that attachment?
It sure is. Is that humility? Is that humility? Do you think that pleases Krishna? I'm asking you, Somil. Does that please Krishna? Why not? Yeah. Suppose you're calling me. And then I return the call. And you say, oh, no, I can't talk to you. I'm too fallen. Then why you call? Make sense? Does that make sense? Krishna will feel bad. He's a person. He has feelings.
So that's like when we chat Hare Krishna with our attention.
Yes, that's also true.
That's probably true.
Okay, let's say that you go to a city you haven't been to for a long time, and you have an old friend in that city. You haven't seen them for many, 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 many years. And they said, anytime you come, you can stop by. And somehow you didn't have time to tell them you were coming because you just found out at the last minute you were going to be there. You didn't know you were going to be there. You don't have time to warn them of your arrival. So you decide to surprise them. And you come and you knock on their door. And they open the door and they say, oh, my house is a mess. And they close the door. How will you feel?
Really upset and rejected.
Yes. So don't do that. Now, if you do that, and devotees do that, because they're thinking, well, you know, if I let Krishna in, I'll be a sahajiya. So if you do that, you're still changed. You're still changed, and at least you can hanker for that again. So when you're doing, your Vaidhi Sadhana now has some element of Raganuga in it, because you're at least having some desire. After a while you think, what a fool I was, that I closed the door on Krishna. When will he come back? When will he come back?
How prepare
in that? I hope I'm doing that now. I'm really trying. I'm really trying.
Trying what?
To protect you from that mistake. I am trying so hard. I'm throwing myself into this. I'm expending like quadruple energy that I'd like to expend.
Doesn't Krishna always knock on our door and shutting out? Like, he doesn't do it, he doesn't personally.
Yeah, tamam prapadyante. Yes and no. Yes.
Why no?
If somebody's really offended you, and they say they're sorry, do you necessarily immediately believe them and come back? Especially if it was a very grievous offense.
He's saying that we're big offenders.
Very big offenders.
So that's why Krishna doesn't.
He does, but he's cautious.
He does it indirectly.
He may do something directly. Generally, in the beginning, when a person first makes a decision, I want to be a devotee of Krishna, Krishna usually gets very excited and gives you some strong reciprocation immediately. But then he's a little cautious. Just, he's a person, just like you would be. If you had a husband who had affairs with 100 different women, and then he came to you one day and said, you know, I'm really sorry, can you take me back? So you might be really excited that he's even talking to you. You know, the first 5 minutes, you might go, wow. And then you think, well, I don't know. How do I know you're really sorry? You might not let him back into your house right away. If he says, can I move back in and live with you now? I said, I'm sorry. Would you say, yeah? Probably not. Yeah. Probably say, well, you have to show me that you're sorry. And for many of us, even after we say we're sorry, we say we want to be a devotee, we still go flirt with Maya over and 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 over again. Flirt with Maya. Yeah. We're supposed to be in love with Krishna. We've been carrying on this stupid, unrequited love affair with Maya now for a long time. She doesn't even satisfy us. She just pierces us with a trident. And then we can come to Krishna, I'm tired of being pierced with a trident. Okay, you coming because you're tired of being pierced with a trident, or you coming because you're actually sorry and you love me? You know, he's happy we're coming. So he's happy we're coming. So he gives us a little taste, something little, which to us seems amazing, but really is just a little tiny nothing practically. I go, yes, that's what I want. He says, okay, now do the work. Show me it's what you want. Prove it. Show me that you're real. And every once in a while, he may check on us. You know, open the door. How you doing? And we may get some incredible experience in a kirtan. But those sort of amazing experiences in kirtan, that's different than with talking about the start of Raganuga Bhakti. We're not just talking about some very amazingly blissful experience or some wonderful realization that we had or some like, wow, Krishna consciousness is great. We're talking about something a little different, which is what? What is this desire? To serve in a particular way. And the way it's explained is to follow a particular resident of Vrindavan. So when we'll get a desire, I want to serve Krishna like Mother Yasoda does, or I want to serve Krishna like Nanda Maharaj does, or I want to serve Krishna like Lalita does, or I want to serve Krishna like Nupamanjari does, or I want to serve Krishna like Subala does. Follow? That's very different than, wow, that kirtan, I actually felt some transcendental bliss. Yes? Definitely. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati says that some perfected devotees have forms in Gaura Lila and Krishna Lila, some only in Gaura Lila, some only in Krishna Lila. Okay, any other questions on eligibility? I'm going to take like 2 more minutes and then I've got to go on to method. Yes?
So it's not, it's when we do service, usually our intention is what's here for me, what am I going to get?
Yeah, that means it's not really service, by the way.
Yeah.
I've actually talked about that before, and I just don't have time to go there.
No, no, that's all again. Right. I'm just
but I have talked about that before. That the desire for a taste can be also spiritual. That's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, chapter 3. So I'll just refer you to that, but I've talked about it before. I don't want to go to there now. Any other questions on eligibility? Does everyone feel this is clear, that the two things are clear?
It's very exciting.
Good. Next is, what is the method? How do you practice Raganuga Bhakti? What's the difference between Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti? So externally, it's not going to look very much different. Externally, you're still going to the morning program and you're still chanting your rounds and you're going to classes and your external behavior is not going to radically change. Although Prabhupada talks about the end of this chapter, and he talks about this even for Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, but it's even more true for Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti, that one should practice devotional service according to one's particular taste. And page 127. So what you'll see is as people advanced in Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti, they tend to have some aspect of devotional service that they do a lot more of. So they may do a lot more, maybe they really get into meditation, maybe they really hear a lot, maybe they do a lot more deity service. There's some aspect of the nine processes that they may really blossom in their life. This can also happen in Vaidhi-sadhana. This is not that it can't happen in Vaidhi-sadhana. But in Raghunuga Sadhana, you're going to also see this. So externally, the person's activities don't change that much. But there starts to be aspects of service for which they're really having a taste. That can be also before that. Then the main change that happens is internally. That in Raghunuga Sadhana, one's internal meditation changes. One should internally meditate on the devotee who exemplifies the feeling you have for Krishna. So if you have a feeling for Krishna of friendship, then you particularly want to meditate on Subal. Krishna's dealings with the cowherd boys. If you have a feeling for Krishna in parental love, you want to particularly meditate on Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj. And Prabhupada in chapter 3 of the 10th canto, where Mother Yasoda is churning butter for Krishna. And there's this one verse where Prabhupada says in the purport that those who develop love in the mood of Vatsalya Bhav, they should meditate on this scene. So if what awakens in you is motherly affection for Krishna, not just parental, but motherly particularly, then you'd meditate on that. Mother Yasoda's churning the butter and she's perspiring and the flowers are falling from her hair and she's singing songs about Krishna. If what awakens in you is a paternal feeling for Krishna, Prabhupada talks about here about meditating on the activities of Nanda Maharaj. Right? And then we can talk about the different feelings that can awaken. So one is being Krishna's friend. One is being Krishna's servant. Then there's, Raktak, that one would meditate on. One is being Krishna's lover. So Krishna's lover, there's Krishna's queens in Dwarka. If one's inclined that way, one meditate on Krishna's dealings with Rukmini and Satyabhama. Another is Krishna's dealings in Vrindavan. Then in Krishna's dealings in Vrindavan, there are some who want to have direct, as Prabhupada says, Kali, one who wants direct union with Krishna, and one who wants to be an assistant maidservant, one who's relishing Krishna's conjugal mood, but as an assistant. They don't want direct contact with Krishna. So one would be meditating on Lalita Gopi, or perhaps one of the other gopis, but Lalita Gopi is the chief gopi, and the other would be meditating on the Manjari. So in the beginning, one might meditate just on Lalita Gopi, and eventually it may awaken, oh, I'm actually a servant of Chitra Gopi, or I'm actually a servant of Induleka Gopi, or something like that. In the beginning, one may be meditating just on Rupa Manjari, and eventually one may, oh, I'm actually a servant of Rati Manjari. You follow? So in the beginning, one may be meditating on Mother Yasoda, but then you may say, oh, I'm actually a servant of... It will become more specific, will awaken. But in general, in the beginning, one meditates on Krishna's dealings with that person. And Prabhupada says here that it's not advised that you meditate on being that person. So you don't meditate, I'm Lalita, or I'm Nanda Maharaj, or I'm Subal, because that can become Mayavadi. But you meditate on, I want to get the same mood and I want to have the same service. So you particularly, now again, you don't stop reading everything else. It's not that you stop reading about Dhruva Maharaj, you don't stop reading about Maharaj Prithu, you don't stop reading the prayers of Queen Kunti. But you may particularly want to read those leelas and meditate on those leelas that pertain to your particular feeling. And you also may like to associate with other devotees who have that particular feeling. And how will that happen? Krishna will arrange that. But you may end up seeking out and associating with people who have that particular feeling. So someone asked here, as far as method, why do advanced devotees act as neophytes? Will not an advanced devotee outwardly acting so inspire other neophytes? What is the purpose of such duplicity? Is it humility? It's not really duplicity. Because it's, when we say they're acting as neophytes, we don't mean they act like baboons. That's not what we mean. We don't mean that the Raghunuga Bhakti goes around as a neophyte in terms of offending others. That's not what we mean. You know, well, I'm going to hide the fact that I'm a Raghunuga Bhakti by being offensive, like a neophyte. In other words, they externally, they don't say, okay, you know, as one advances in Raghunuga Bhakti, they don't need to chant 16 rounds because they're constantly chanting. But they're still going to, like Haridas Thakur, he didn't stop chanting his prescribed number of rounds even till the end, right? So part of that is that of humility, and part of that is to instruct others. But it's not duplicitous. Yes? Somebody had a hand? Yes? Did you raise your hand? No, you're just holding onto the pillar. Okay. Yes?
When we see some general characteristics of people like us, what kind of the race people would say? Like if you want the parents to go after the one?
No. You can't. Until those feelings have awakened, you can't say anything. It's meaningless. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, because how it responds to
nothing. It doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't. Nothing. It doesn't. And now we get to the point Prabhupada's even talking about gender. And you notice he talks about it twice? Did you notice that? Yeah. First he makes the point that men can also aspire to be gopis. And he goes through the whole story of the sages and the Dandakaranya first. You notice that? And then after he explains all that, and then he explains again. Explains twice. Once in depth and once briefly. That men can also aspire to be gopis. Women can also aspire to be cowherd boys. So it doesn't have to do with anything. Our eternal nature, our eternal inclination towards Krishna has nothing to do at all with our present body or personality. Nothing. I mean, it might coincidentally. So you might be a man in this life and you might also be a cowherd boy. You might be a woman in this life and might also be a gopi. That's just coincidence. That's not... It doesn't mean anything. You might be a very quiet person in this life and your eternal personality might be very quiet. And you might be very argumentative in this life and your eternal personality might be argumentative. But that's just chance. You could be a very quiet person in this life and have an eternally argumentative personality. So it's not... This is just... It's not real. Don't take it so seriously. Whatever. But don't take it seriously. Whatever you have in this life, it's just for this life, it's just a drama. You've been something else in another life. We've all been so many things. Every one of us for sure has been both a man and a woman. Every one of us for sure has been a quiet person and a loud person, has been a careful person and a risk-taking person. We've done so many. We've tried everything. Figure that. Just what you happen to be in this life with no meaning. And it's a meaning and you can use it for Krishna, but it doesn't have some eternal meaning. What we identify as our personality in this life is not our eternal personality. We're looking at the mind. You're not looking at the self. Isn't that nice? What a relief. Whew. You know, it's nice to take some course on how to fix your personality in this life. Okay, fine. You know, but really. Hare Krishna. It's like fixing your body, you know? Just going to be a pile of ashes. And the present personality is just going to merge with air and ether and the Mahatattva. It's all going to be gone. Don't need it, don't want it, not you. Don't worry about it. No, nothing to do with it. And you can't think like that. You can't think, well, you know, I like... No, it's not like that. well, right now in this life, I really like green, so when I'm in my perfected body, I'll also like green. Maybe, but if so, just by coincidence, we don't have anything. In material consciousness, there's nothing that's indicative of the eternal nature, other than general things like I'd like to live forever ever and be young and strong, and I'd like to always be happy, and I'd like to understand things, and I'd like loving relationships. That part of the eternal nature comes through. Okay, a couple of things I've got to make sure, because we're running late, is, okay, what about Sahajya? So the Sahajiyas are people who take up an improper practice without proper eligibility. First of all, the practice they do is not proper Raghunuga Bhakti. Proper Raghunuga Bhakti is internal meditation outside following sadhana. Just like if we think about perfected beings like Rupa Goswami. So he wasn't externally in Mahaprabhu's Leela acting like a gopi. And sometimes you will find in Gaura Leela, some of the devotees would sometimes pretend they were carrying pots of yogurt on their head or something like that. And that's sometimes. That was unusual. So the Sahajiyas, they externally imitate the behavior of a resident of Vrindavan. Externally. And you notice they almost always go for the gopis. You notice that? So they do it externally instead of internally. And they don't wait until they have an actual awakening. They do it when they're just on the mental platform. And they don't wait until they're free from even gross anarthas. So they're engaging in illicit sex and smoking and drinking and so many things. They haven't had any kind of awakening, and they just imitate externally. Now, it's interesting that Prabhupada, talking about the Sahajiyas, sometimes he just condemns them as non-devotees. Another time he says that eventually, because they have some connection with Krishna, they may become devotees. Sometimes he even says they're devotees because they have some connection with Krishna. But it's not the process. It's not a recommended process. Now he talks about Siddha Pranali. Siddha Pranali is where somebody, the way Siddha Pranali is practiced today, generally, is somebody who's not qualified, they're not free from even gross anarthas, they haven't had any kind of awakening of desire, and somebody just comes and says, okay, I want you to meditate on being a 13-year-old Manjari Gopi, and your name is, you know, Jiva Manjari, and you like to wear purple, and you play a lute, and this is what you meditate. And that's what Siddha Pranali has become, and that is not a bona fide process. What Bhaktivinoda Thakura describes in Jiva Dharma is quite different, and that's somebody who's already awakened, they've already started the process of Raghunuga Bhakti, they've already started to realize their swarup, and then their guru assists them with that after they're already far progressed on the path. However, that's not even necessary. All that is achieved from within the heart by the grace of the holy name. So such external help is not even necessary. But the kind of Siddha Pranali that's done today is not, it's not a bona fide process. And it's the people who engage in this are just simply a disturbance to society. There are people who came to Krishna consciousness through the Hare Krishna movement, through ISKCON, through Srila Prabhupada, who then have gone to such processes. Probably due to impatience. Okay, I believe we have any other thing I absolutely have to make sure that I cover here. Okay, one other thing I just want to make sure is really clear. When Srila Prabhupada says that those in Raghunuga Bhakti are not so much following the regulative principles, he's not referring to the four regulative principles. Prabhupada talks about regulative principles in different ways. So here what he means are the 64 Angas of Bhakti. So one who's already in Raganuga Sadhana, they're doing the basics. So they're doing at least their 16 rounds, four little principles, worship. They're doing the basics. And then they're engaging in the 64 Angas according to their taste. So it may appear to be not so regular and not so as one progresses in Raganuga Bhakti, one's going to do external activities that are also more and more spontaneous. Does that make sense to everybody? So that's what we mean. We don't mean that when someone starts Raganuga Bhakti, they don't chant their rounds anymore. Or they start going to the pub and drinking alcohol. That's not what we mean. We also mean, again, we talked about a long time ago, that what's motivating them is not the scriptures anymore. What's motivating the person doing Raganuga Sadhana? Inside, from their own experience. The person's had some experience. Krishna's my child, Krishna's my master, Krishna's my lover, Krishna's my friend. They've had some experience, and that's now what's pushing them. They're no longer being pushed by the logic of the scriptures. They don't really care about the logic of the scriptures. Is Krishna the supreme? Is Narayan the supreme? Is Shiva the supreme? Who cares? I love Krishna. You follow? So in Vaidhi Sadhana one as well, are you sure Krishna is the supreme? What does it say? Maybe he says here Shiva is the supreme. Can you? I think I told you I had one student who got bewildered that she fell in love with a Shaivite and she started wondering if Shiva was supreme. I think I told you that. You know, looking up in the scriptures. But in Raganuga Sadhana, who cares? I love Krishna. Who cares? So there's a Purana that glorifies Shiva as the supreme. Oh well. Doesn't matter anymore. No, so the scriptures say that one should read Bhagavatam. You're no longer reading Bhagavatam because that's what it says in the scripture. You're reading Bhagavatam because, oh, now I can read about Krishna. Now I can read about Krishna's devotees. Now I can do something where I can fall in love with Krishna. That what's driving you is different. So that's what we mean when we say that one in Raganuga Bhakti is not so strictly following the regulative principles. That's what we mean. Okay, other questions here? I think we answered that. Where will we find the knowledge about service in mind and about our spiritual identity? Service in mind, you'll find knowledge about how to do service in mind, as I said, from the Nectar of Instruction, text 8, which is also explained in Jiva Dharma. And I explained that the other day when we were doing meditation. So in Raganuga Bhakti, you're starting to meditate on the relationship between Krishna and that devotee that you're following. As your swarup awakens more and more, and you start to actually see who you are, instead of just a general feeling that, wow, I feel Krishna's my friend, you'll start to actually experience what are the constituents of my spiritual body, and your meditation will start being on yourself, watching the pastimes and then entering the pastimes. You can see some of this if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, especially Anchalila. And Mahaprabhu was talking about his ecstasies. And he talks about how he's meditating on Krishna's activities with Radharani. And you can see he's taking the mood of an assistant gopi who's picking flowers and watching the lila. So that's an example of Raganuga meditation. External symptoms we'll look at in chapter 18, with the 9 symptoms of bhava. Of course, there's some symptoms of an advanced devotee. First of all, an advanced devotee is going to be someone who's very
inspiring
and inspired and happy. That doesn't mean they're going to be like this all day long. But it's going to be somebody who's happy and inspired and inspiring, and certainly somebody who's not having some kind of gross fall down. Are there some? I don't. Oh, I was talking about that. I was talking about meditation and how Krishna, you can see Krishna through the material elements. That's a little different. Oh gosh, I don't know. I think they were published like 2-3 years ago. Maybe more. Why Srila Prabhupada not discriminated Ragatmika and Raganuga Bhakti? Our assumption is that it was a transcription mistake. That's our assumption at this point. See, unfortunately, nobody was really reading Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu until after Srila Prabhupada was off the planet. And then it became clear, wait a minute, Prabhupada in Chaitanya Charitamrita Majjalila is translating these verses differently than they're translated in Nectar Devotion. And Chaitanya Charitamrita Prabhupada is distinguishing between Raga Ragatmika and Raganuga. The Nectar Devotion he's not. And all we can assume is that, especially since Nectar Devotion was a very, very early book. Nectar Devotion was done really early in the movement. And anything that was done really in the movement, the devotees hearing Prabhupada's tapes would have been less familiar with the terminology. Does that make sense to everybody? So, you know, you have somebody listening to a tape, and maybe they've only been in the movement for a week or two, and they may not, just like we had, you know, there was a mistake in the Bhagavad Gita where Prabhupada said the pitris, planet of the pitris, and the editor had written the planet of the trees. Some kind of tree, because they weren't accustomed to the terminology. So that's our assumption. Is there anything here? Do many of the problems in our society come from that we externally do not behave like neophytes? I think it's more a problem of people not going through an Arjuna Vritti fast enough, because Prabhupada says till nista it's a hard struggle with determination. And I see that the main problem is that we're pleasure-seeking beings and we cannot stay long without pleasure. And so Bhagavatam says two kinds of people are happy, the fools and the transcendentalists. So before you come to Krishna consciousness, you're a fool. I don't mean to insult anybody, but in general, maybe you were not. But anyway, people like me, before we came to Krishna consciousness, we are a fool. And if we're not yet experiencing transcendental pleasure, then you're suffering. And you're very aware that you're suffering. So this hard struggle with determination, how long can you do a hard struggle with determination? Not very long. You know, to do a hard struggle with determination, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years, 35 years. You've got to come out the other end. So I see that a lot of problems with our society are that people just, they get stuck. And then they go back. And we have other problems with our society that are not related to this, that are different. One of that is that we're a preaching society. We're constantly bringing in new people. That means the majority of our members at any time are going to be fairly new. New. Pretty, as long as we're preaching, we're supposed to be preaching, that means we pretty much always have a large number of people in our movement who are beginners. That is another problem. We have lots of problems and lots of good things. I'm not going to go through all this now. Okay, I think that's it. What I'd like to ask you is, they canceled the trip to Tirukkadamba tomorrow.
Oh.
On